three generations of chiropractors in my family. I wasn't vaccinated as a kid. Vaccines never really hit my radar screen. So after I left that meeting, I thought, well, I should probably look into this. So I started with reading the CDC documents. And now, all these years later, I put more than 20,000 hours of my own personal time into researching the problems associated with vaccines. And what we actually came, it boils down to just a few things that are consistent across the board. Vaccines are not safe, they're not effective, and they definitely do cause harm.
Let me ask you this here, that we are told that they're safe and effective, but when we're told that, what exactly does that mean?
Well, what safe really means is that it shouldn't harm you at all, that it shouldn't be any problem. But in safety studies, when it comes to vaccines, one thing for sure is they don't use a true placebo as the control. So when you're looking at a new drug, say for high blood pressure, you're given a high blood pressure medication and you're giving something like a sugar pill. Well, with vaccines, they bring a new vaccine to market. They use either another vaccine with a known safety profile, or they use a shot of a substance that they consider to be inert. For example, when they brought the Gardasil vaccine to market, Gardasil has the highest concentration of aluminum of any vaccine. And in the safety study, what they used as the placebo was a shot of aluminum. So when they looked at the information at the end and they looked at the side effects, they said the side effects were the same for the shot of Gardasil as they were for the shot of aluminum. So therefore, the vaccine was as safe as the placebo. The other thing that's very dishonest. And the other thing that's deceptive is that when they start doing a vaccine trial, they need to get enrollments. And the children that are enrolled, or even the adults that are enrolled into the trial, are all completely healthy. They have no underlying health problems like asthma or allergies or seizure disorders. And so the vaccines are initially tested on children and adults that are completely healthy. But when the vaccine is approved for use, it is recommended for all children, even those children that are chronically ill. So that becomes a new form of an experiment when they start using the vaccines on those chronically ill children.
It's like medical experimentation there. But as far as being effective, Sherry, are they not effective at preventing disease? Or what does it mean when they say that these vaccines are effective?
Well, what it means by the Webster's definition of effective, it means that you do something that achieves the intended goal. So the intended goal of when I inject a vaccine into your arm is for you to create an antibody. And so if the vaccine does that, if I inject you and it creates an antibody, it's effective. It's created its what it was intended to do. But just the mere presence of having an antibody is not the same thing as protecting you from getting sick. So vaccines are effective, if you use the scientific word, but they do not protect you from getting sick, because there are many, many substances or circumstances in the medical literature that shows that you can have high antibody levels and still contract the illness. That's even true for tetanus, that you can have very high tetanus antibodies, and unless you thoroughly clean out the wound, there's a strong possibility you may contract the infection called tetanus.
I see. So it reminds me of the phrase, he who controls the language wins the argument. And so by really what you're saying, Sherry, is that they have kind of changed the definition when it comes to vaccines of what effective is. So when the general public hears effective, they think it prevents disease, when really it just means it created an antibody, which might not even help.
Exactly.
Okay.
That exactly sums it up. And we assume that it's safe, meaning that we've tested it and we know that when we get it injected into our body, it's not going to cause harm.
Now, Sherry, what about doctors in medical school? Aren't they taught about the safety and efficacy of vaccines?
Well, you know, when I went to medical school, I graduated in 1985. And at that period of time, and when I went out into practice, there were only three vaccines, really, that were used in children. There was DPT, MMR, and polio. And it wasn't until 1991 when there was the big ramp up of the vaccine schedule, starting with the hepatitis B vaccine at birth, and then they added the Hib, and then chickenpox and Prevnar, and now we have 46 doses of 16 vaccines that are given to children by the time they're 5 years of age. So I would say that when I was in medical school, there wasn't much to talk about. There was only the three vaccines. But then we had this big ramp up. So anybody who's graduated from medical school and gone through a residency program from 1991 forward, which has been 25 years, the only thing that they're told is here's the schedule and here's how you give it, and you really need to deal with those parents who are doing this whole thing called vaccine hesitancy now, which is being published in all of the medical literature, saying that all of these crazy people, why wouldn't they want vaccines? They're actually even combing information off of Facebook of the arguments that people get into and try to come up with arguments to convince more and more people why they should be vaccinated.
You know, it sounds like dirty poker to me. They've co-opted the language. They're censoring information. I mean, Zuckerberg with Facebook has openly said that if you come out with anti-vaccine posts on Facebook, we're going to delete them. So that's not even disputable. That's their policy, is that they are not going to embrace this anti-vaccine propaganda. But the reality is, you hear people say, well, look, concerning vaccines, the science is settled. But science is never settled, is it?
No, science is never settled. And the more vaccines that they add to the schedule, the more complex it is. I mean, think about just from, you know, adding ingredients when you're baking cookies. You know, the more ingredients you put into your souffle or whatever, it creates a more challenging problem. So the science is never done, and it's disturbing that many people who have spent as much time as I have and others have investigating the problems with vaccines and have come across anywhere from 700 to 1,500 articles that have been published in the mainstream medical journals showing the problems associated with vaccines, that we're called anti-science when what we're doing is presenting an argument using their science.
Yeah, I did an interview with Neil Miller in Austin, and he's written a book called 400 Critical Vaccine Studies. And that's 400 of literally thousands of studies that have been published in peer-reviewed medical journals that show that vaccines cause injury. But if we bring that to light, we're called crazy.
Yes, or other things.
So Sherry, talk about potential side effects of vaccines.
Any one of the vaccines can cause a long list of side effects, and all you have to do is read the package inserts to see them.
But if you do, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yes, you are. Yeah. And if you read the VAERS reports, you know, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, that collects more than 30,000 reports every single year on vaccine injuries, and the injury that they can report can be anything from a sore arm all the way up to a death. And they feel like that's less than 10% of the people who are actually injured.
Yeah.
Can you think of any other product that has 30,000 consumer reports per year about problems would still be on the market?
None. And you mentioned the package inserts. You know, I know you're familiar with this, but it was the Sanofi Pasteur Tripedia. It was a DPT vaccine that was pulled off the market a couple years ago. They've since then put it back on the market, and they removed these potential side effects from the package insert. But it said literally that autism
is one of the side effects.
Can you imagine any product on the market other than a vaccine listing may cause autism and still being allowed to be sold?
I know. And many of the other thing that they're doing in terms of manipulating the package inserts is they used to report the entire study on the package insert. They would show you how many children were involved in the study, how many children converted in terms of antibodies on the first, second, and third vaccine. And they would manipulate, and now all of that's removed. The other thing is that many of the side effects are listed as occurring at less than 1%. Well, they're saying that that's not enough information and not really necessary for people to know, so they're pulling that off too. So they're hiding the data. They've hide the vaccine, the information inside of the vaccine safe to data link that nobody's allowed to see it. They've hid the information from theirs. They've made it extremely complicated for anyone who doesn't normally go into the VAERS database and look for information to use it. It's really clunky and difficult to use. And so they are constantly hiding information. They're hiding things, and they're making it more and more difficult for people to track down the association between vaccines and any type of side effect. I mean, the hepatitis B vaccine, I think, has one of the longest lists of side effects in terms of neurological disorders. And if anybody asked me what I thought were the worst vaccines, the two I would say would be Gardasil and hepatitis B in terms of side effect profile.
Sherry, what are the side effects that you know of the Gardasil vaccine?
Oh, the Gardasil vaccine causes so many debilitating things in terms of some autoimmune conditions, like something called Pott syndrome. I think there's something upwards to 180 confirmed deaths from that vaccine, and I'd say that's a pretty serious side effect. The hepatitis B vaccine has a very, very long list of neurological complications, from blindness to Guillain-Barré to all kinds of very long list of neurological complications. And there really isn't any reason to even give that vaccine at birth.
Right, because it's the only people that are at risk are intravenous drug users or those that are sexually promiscuous, of which I don't know any newborns.
No, and the worst part about that one that it's given at birth is the fact that if children are born prematurely, if they're born at 36 or 37 weeks, they're underweight or even younger, the pediatricians will want to give the hepatitis B vaccine on schedule as if they were born at a full-term 40-week infant and a full weight. So I've had parents that have told me that their child was born very prematurely, was only 2 pounds, and the pediatrician in the neonatal intensive care unit wanted to give them the full dose of hepatitis B vaccine while they are in the intensive care unit.
That would be the equivalent of taking that adult pediatrician and giving them 3 ounces of the same vaccine or something.
Right.
I bet they wouldn't take it.
I know. And the original paperwork on the hepatitis B vaccine actually said you should never give a partial dose and you should always give it on time as though the child was full term and full weight. Even if they are premature and underweight, you're supposed to give it on time.
But so here's the bizarre thing, Sherry, in this vaccine, what Robert Scott Bell, our good friend, calls the vaccines being the sacred cow of the Church of Biological Mysticism.
Oh, I love that. That's really good.
If you question them, you're a heretic. If you question that, if you read the package insert, you're crazy. If you actually list the side effects that are known, you're a conspiracy theorist. I mean, it's like completely anti-science, that the position that vaccines are safe and effective. Science should always be a dialogue, coming to the conclusion, looking at the pros and cons, and coming to a conclusion of what something really is. But we're told, don't question vaccines. Don't read the package inserts. If you have somebody that was vaccine injured, it was just a coincidence, even though it happens a million times a year. And then just do it. Just shut up and take the vaccine.
And what's the worst part of all of that, Ty, in terms of parents? I mean, young parents, I mean, what parents really need to have is someone in their community that is a medical professional, such as a nurse, a nurse practitioner, a pediatric chiropractor, a naturopath, or even their mother or their grandmother who's raised children before. Because if you have a new baby, what you kind of want to know is this normal? Are they sick enough that I should be concerned? You know, they're kind of fussy. Should I take them to the pediatrician? They just need a partner in that. And instead, they take them to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician say, no, you have to vaccinate. If you're not going to be vaccinated, we're going to kick you out of the practice, because that's money to them. And then the problem is that parents don't understand that the early childhood vaccine preventable illnesses really consist of nothing more than a fever, a cough, a rash, and some diarrhea. And so if they learn some simple tools to take care of their child when they have a fever, a cough, a rash, and some diarrhea, instead of vaccinating them with all of these doses of vaccines, and the exchange for that is a lifetime of chronic illness, serious autoimmune diseases, maybe even a death, or on the autism spectrum, you're going to trade that for a fever, a cough, a rash, and some diarrhea? It's really, really ludicrous.
It is ludicrous. And what you just described, pediatricians kicking parents out of their practice, they tried to do that to us. Before I knew anything about vaccines, we were just starting to learn with our eldest daughter, Brianna. We were told, because we question, are these really necessary? If you don't vaccinate, we don't subscribe to that anti-vaccine propaganda. You're not welcome in our practice.
Yeah, and it's gotten even worse since then, because your daughter's older now. Well, this year in the Blue Cross Blue Shield handbook that came out, it actually talked about something called the Combo 10, that in a pediatrician's office, if they have all the children under the age of 2 that have been fully vaccinated with all 10 of these vaccines called the Combo 10 by their second birthday, the vaccination rate in the pediatrician's office needs to be 63% of their entire practice needs to be fully vaccinated by this Combo 10. And if they are, they are rewarded by Blue Cross Blue Shield at $400 per child, per eligible member. So if you've got 1,000 kids in your practice and 63% of them are fully vaccinated, you get 1,000 times 400 in terms of a bonus from Blue Cross Blue Shield for following through on their standards.
$400,000 bonus if you have 1,000 patients.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That's insane.
Wow, so there's not really any independence
No.
from the monetary influence of these vaccines?
There isn't, and this is the reason why that parents are being kicked out of the practice, because they have this 63% amount that they have to have their kids vaccinated. There's 63% of their patient population needs to be vaccinated. Now, that's what we know about Blue Cross Blue Shield, because from Blue Cross Blue Shield, because that's the manual we have. We don't really know, or no one has actually discovered yet, if that also applies to Medical Mutual, to Aetna, to any of the other big carriers across the country, if it applies to any of those things. So the bottom line is that parents always have to know, follow the money. Follow the money. Now pediatricians can't even look at your child and say, well, they've had a horrible reaction before, or they have these side effects, maybe it would not be so good to vaccinate them, because that dips into the money in their pocket.
And pediatricians that are saying that are being persecuted. We were just talking about on the way over here, a local pediatrician here in Nashville came out and said, you know what, we're just not going to vaccinate at this practice anymore. He has been threatened with his medical license in Tennessee for not vaccinating. And it's not like that people can't find another place to get vaccinated if they want to.
Exactly.
I mean, you go to any Walgreens, you can get your flu shot.
Exactly.
You know, go to any CVS corner store, you get the flu. You can get vaccinated.
Or the health department, or any place. Exactly.
It's not like it's threatening the health by not vaccinating. You can get vaccinated anywhere. They just don't like people bucking the system.
Right, which goes back to that whole issue of vaccine hesitancy, that they are trying to even comb Facebook posts and saying that, you know, we're trying to find data in order to figure out why these parents wouldn't want their kids to be vaccinated, and craft pervasive, convincing arguments to train the pediatricians on how to get them to their patients to overcome this vaccine hesitancy.
You know what, Sherry, I've talked to pediatricians that have graduated medical school recently, and they actually give them lessons on how to persuade parents into vaccinating.
Right.
They don't teach them about the vaccines at all. They just teach them how to persuade a parent that may not be compliant.
Right. Compliant is the word. And we've talked so much, Ty, about all the things that have to do with kids and pediatricians. I think it's really important to understand, you know, that adults are being put into this pot of mandatory, too.
Talk about that. Well, Healthy People 2020, right?
With Healthy People 2020 and with the use of electronic medical records.
Okay.
I mean, electronic health records came into vogue in around 2010 when all doctors were told, you're going to have to start using these electronic medical records in order to get billed. So we need to have these, you install these in your office. Well, the problem is how expensive they were. You had to buy a module from the government. If you bought a Medicaid module, it was $43,000 per physician, per physician in the practice. Well, if there were four people in the practice, it's 43,000 times four. And the same thing, you had to buy a Medicare module, which was $62,000 per module. So, you know, physicians' offices are small businesses. I mean, where are you ever going to recoup that investment? Like, never. So the government said, not a problem. We'll pay it for you. And in exchange for that, you just have to give us all the data. And so each year, starting in 2010, which of course was when Obamacare came into being, by 2012, they installed more than 500,000 physicians across the country had bought into the system, and they were teaching them how to use the electronic medical records, that each year they had to add a few more things, a few more boxes that needed to be checked, and that data gone off to the government. And in 2016, they added the box that needed to be checked was your immunization status. And that goes into what's called the immunization information system, or the local, regional, and district vaccine registry. And your information goes into this registry to always be there. And the intention of these registries are to be cradle-to-grave tracking of your vaccination status. And this is rolling over now into physicians. This is rolling over into adults now, because now there are at least 10 vaccines that are being required for adults. And there's precedent being set up in Australia where if you aren't fully vaccinated, you aren't going to be able to access your equivalent of Medicare. The National Adult Vaccine Plan was released in February of 2015, and at the same time, they introduced an implementation plan. And some of the things that have been burbling around in the background that haven't come to the forefront yet in terms of implementation are, if you're not fully vaccinated, will you be able to travel? Will you be able to renew your driver's license? Will you be able to go to a public place like a football game or a basketball game? Will you be able to go to a grocery store unless you can show that you are fully vaccinated? That's the type of plan that's coming down the road. And I just see these people as just needle-wheeling maniacs that every single person needs to be injected with every possible vaccine. And the adult vaccination plan actually has language in it that says that they want adults to demand and request their vaccines. And if they haven't demanded and requested them, that they will be offered to them. They will have financial incentives to give it. And it is to be required for every vaccine that's currently on the market and every vaccine in the future. And we know there are at least 140 vaccines in the developmental pipeline.
That's scary.
So that's where we're headed. So when a lot of people listen to the Truth About Vaccine seminar or they listen to talks about vaccines, they say, well, my kids are past that. You know, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I don't have to make that decision. Or, you know, my kids are having grandkids and they don't ever listen to me anyways. But here's the thing. Many of these vaccines that are now in development are headed directly towards adolescents and adults. And the adult vaccination plan is a 5-year escalated, ramped up system to get people on board by 2020 for the implementation of the Healthy People 2020 guidelines that have become goals.
So this is in essence mandatory vaccines under the guise of not being mandatory.
Yes, it's sort of like paying your taxes, right? They're all
right, voluntary
until you decide not to volunteer.
Right.
Everyone, not here and around the world, because in 2000, the Gates Foundation funded an organization called Gavi, which is the Global Alliance for Vaccination and Immunization. They started that organization with a donation of $750 million. Since that time, they have invested $6.8 billion into vaccinating the world.
Wow.
And that started in 2000.
So, for those that are watching, Sherry, what exactly is Healthy People 2020?
It actually started in 1990 when the Surgeon General came forth and worked with the Department of Health at that time, and they created what was called the Healthy People Guidelines for 1990. And what they looked at is with the health of our overall society, and they were laudable goals. They were looking at things like smoking cessation and wearing motorcycle helmets and obesity and clean water. And so they set up goals to go from 1990 to 2000 and to see where we could get. And so every decade, they have established these new goals. So there was goals from 2000 to 2010, and then in 2010, they created the goals to be set up for 2020. And so the difference is that the original goals in 1990, there were 15 goals and about 225 objectives. In the Healthy People 2020 guidelines, there are 44 goals and 1,200 objectives to look at every single corner of our health and every single corner of our life. And there's a sector in there for vaccines that they want to have 90% of the population vaccinated with flu shots, DPT shots, MMR, and all of these were set up initially to be guidelines, but they have become goals. And the goals now, one of the steps in the goals is to take away your right to refuse. And that has been rolling down the pipeline since, we set up SB 277 in California.
So it's really antithetical to the American way of life, right? The right to freedom.
The right to freedom. And the SB 277 has, you know, taken away parents' rights to refuse,
yeah,
has been published in the public health literature. It's been published in the public health literature to become the model legislation for all 50 states. So what Healthy People 2020 is supposed to do is it's supposed to get everybody vaccinated and get everybody on board and get all the funding for adults and adolescents. And how this all kind of came about at the same time as we developed the Healthy People 2020 guidelines, it started in 2010. In 2010, this was declared the decade of vaccines. And in 2010, the Gates Foundation put up $10 million to start this to be the decade of vaccines. And within this decade of vaccines from 2010 to 2020, in these healthy people guidelines, we need to have electronic medical records and tracking. We need to take away people's right to refuse. We need to ramp up all of these guidelines and turn them into goals. And they are well on their way. I mean, that's really, I mean, we're at 2017. We only have 3 years left for people to become really aware of this and get involved in not allowing this to happen in the future.
So what can we do? What are action steps that we can do to where we can join together and make sure that these healthy people 2020 guidelines don't become mandatory and they start, you know, not letting adults fly if they haven't been fully vaccinated, or you can't go buy groceries if you're not vaccinated? What can we do?
I think the most important step is education. Ty, you know as well as I do that most people still think that vaccines are great. And if you're not vaccinated, if you don't get your flu shots, you're probably going to die. And that flu shots are just as good for you and healthy and as benign as a B12 shot. And so we have to get this education out. We have to get information to people to understand that vaccines are not safe. They don't protect you. They are causing harm. We are creating a multi-generational destruction of the DNA of the human race. So we have to, I always thought that this could be done at the grassroots level. If we got enough people at the grassroots level to just say no, thank you, I'm not doing this, that it would stop. But now we've got the pressure, the downward pressure on these rules of these guidelines, of these laws that are being passed to take away our rights to refuse. So I think that everyone needs to get on board. They need to get educated. We need to somehow wake up the doctors. We need to get the politicians educated. We need to get them to understand that they are destroying the human race, and it needs to stop.
Sure, what about polio? Didn't vaccines wipe out polio?
When people are new to the topic of discussing problems associated with vaccines, it always starts with, what about smallpox? What about polio? Didn't we eradicate smallpox with vaccines? Which, no, we didn't. It was public health. And didn't we eradicate polio? No, we didn't. And we're still causing more polio than we are possibly eliminating by continuing to use the oral polio vaccine. And even the CDC and the World Health Organization said, we are never going to eliminate the polio virus as long as we keep using the live virus or oral polio vaccine. But here's the thing. Polio is not a synonym for paralysis. Most people, the vast majority of people, even at the height of where people were contracting paralysis, they would get exposed to the polio virus, which is a gastrointestinal virus that looked like the stomach flu. And it would just come and go in a few days. And more than 98% of people exposed to that virus had no side effects, no symptoms from it at all. And now, since 1991, the entire Western Hemisphere has considered to be polio-free. It's astonishing to me that we still give children 5 polio vaccines before they start kindergarten. And then some people might say, well, if we don't give them the polio vaccine, then will polio reemerge from these developing countries that still have that virus around? Well, the last time I looked, they looked at it over an 18-year period of time, and less than 20 cases of polio were actually imported from around the world. So it really isn't a valid argument. And polio is, again, I think the most important take home about polio is not a synonym for paralysis. It's like when we talked about effective is not a synonym for protection.
Right, right. And one thing that we have seen over the last couple of years is that the vaccines that we're using in Africa to prevent polio, they're actually causing what they're calling non-polio paralysis.
Right, from the oral polio vaccine.
Right.
And what people don't realize is that there are at least 7 or 8 other families of viruses that can cause paralysis. So when they show you these pictures of kids from Africa or people with a limb that's, you know, deformed, or they're dragging a limb, they're saying, see, this was polio. Well, it may have been one of the other viruses that caused paralysis. It may have been they fell out of a tree. It may have been that they were born with a deformity. It doesn't necessarily mean we need to have more polio vaccine going on in Africa.
Right, right. What about the whooping cough? I remember a discussion that I had with a pediatrician years and years ago, when I was first learning about vaccines, about the whooping cough. And you know, I've forwarded research over that shows that whooping cough's not all that effective. It has side effects, that it's just not what we're being told, right? We're being kind of misled about the whooping cough. And he came back. This is a pediatrician. He said, forget about all that stuff. If you've ever seen a child with whooping cough die, you wouldn't even question the vaccine. So he's like, he goes through this emotional argument. He's a physician. He didn't want to see the data. He goes this emotional argument. If you've ever seen a whooping cough patient die, you wouldn't even be questioning the vaccine. What do you have to say about that?
It's the propaganda. It's the, like you said, he who controls the language, you know. It's the propaganda, because they always go to worst case scenario. Yeah. Like, you know, every child that contracts pertussis is going to die, which is just such propaganda and so not true. I mean, the children under 3 months of age are at higher risk of contracting pertussis and having it be a serious illness because their windpipe is so small and they really can't cough, and that can be a real problem. But the older that people get, the less likely they are to contract with anything serious. I mean, what is pertussis? It's a cough that's persistent, that doesn't have a fever and is worse at night, and can go on for an extended period of time. It can happen in any age group. And now that we know for sure, I mean, the CDC even says the pertussis vaccines really don't work much anymore. We don't really know why. We don't know if the bacteria has morphed or changed. We know we're seeing more of a bacterial infection called parapertussis, which the vaccine doesn't do anything for that. And when they have these outbreaks of pertussis that they're diagnosed, and then they retrospectively do the analysis, they find out that 80-some percent or more of the people who contract pertussis have been fully vaccinated. And so the numbers of unvaccinated are extraordinarily small. But, of course, they're the ones that we blame for all of these outbreaks.
Right, right. And I did an interview with Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, and she mentioned vitamin C has tremendous effects on pertussis.
Absolutely. Yeah. Her documentation on the vitamin C in treating pertussis for all age groups, even from little infants, is just extraordinary. And parents should really get hold of that documentation and should read it.
Yeah.
And I've got the transcript. It's about this thick from, I don't know, around 2000, where they sat and they talked about these antibodies. And they go, well, we aren't even going to talk about antibodies because we know for a fact that we don't know what they're supposed to. No, it was just a regular meeting of like the ACIP committee that they just actually sat around and talked and said, well, we don't really want to bring up the whole discussion about antibodies because we don't really know what it means and we don't really know if they work. So let's just sort of drop that. I have that whole transcript.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's the biggest scam perpetrated on humanity ever. I mean, when you go back in time and look at the smallpox vaccine, I mean, it was all based off of lies, manipulation. The physicians and the government and the scientists were all in collusion. It was all about big money and big government from the very beginning. And when the mandatory vaccination laws first went into effect in the UK in 1853, you know, at the same time was the start of the anti-vaccine movement, and they called it our baby's battle. And it was parents whose children had died after a smallpox vaccine, either of infection or sepsis or gangrene, and they all died. And so they were refusing all of these mandatory vaccines, which were just filthy, and they spread syphilis all over the world, and was based on faulty science from the beginning. And just because we are in a modern day and we have more vaccines doesn't make it any less filthy or any more destructive. In fact, a lot of times on the radio interviews I do, I always say what's coming through that vial is vile.
It is vile. Most of the ingredients, if you weren't a physician injecting it into a baby, but if you were the baby's parents giving it to the baby orally, you could be arrested.
Or injected it.
Or even injected it. Yeah, you'd be arrested.
Could you imagine if you took a two-year-old, any two-year-old, and laid it on the dining room table of the house and had two adults holding them to the table by arms and legs and someone else injecting all of those ingredients into the baby? How fast would Children's Services show up at your door and arrest you for child abuse and take the child away? But that's a normal day in a doctor's office. Because we do it in a room where someone has on a white coat and we can bill insurance for it, we call it a vaccination day.
Because, yeah, you're right. Formaldehyde, antifreeze.
aluminum, mercury, polysorbate 80. What's worse for me is, or what's equally as bad as those ingredients to me are the stray viruses in the viral contaminants that come off of the animal cells that the vaccines are grown in. Those retroviruses could be incorporated into the DNA of children and adults that we don't even know what the outcome can be, because you can't track a retrovirus that has been woven into the intracellular DNA.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Dr. Judy Mikovits shared when I interviewed her.
Yep.
She was studying retroviruses with National Institutes of Health.
And you know that there's two stray viruses that can couple with oncogenes, that the stray viruses that are in flu shots have oncogenes that they can turn on breast cancer genes. And, you know, those are the two that we know about. How many others are out there that we don't know about? Because you can't find what you're not looking for. And there isn't any vaccine researcher out there or any vaccine manufacturer out there that wants to know that a vaccine is causing problems.
Right, right. Out of sight, out of mind.
Right. Right, exactly.
So I'm really looking forward to this one, and this is much more in depth, and I really appreciate you weathering the cold out here on the banks of the Cumberland River in Nashville, Tennessee.
But it's a beautiful day, and we keep moving away from the shadows in order to do this, so it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for asking me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me participate.
I appreciate you.